From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for December 4th, 2020. This Sunday, the Packers host the Philadelphia Eagles at Lambeau, and I hope you're ready. St. Nick is coming this weekend. In order to keep the doors of his California church open, the pastor of the church turned it into a strip club. Now, why would he do that, you ask? Well, the state deemed that churches are non-essential businesses, but strip clubs are essential. Sunday mass must be a hoot. How about this? A North Korean gymnast escaped to South Korea by pole vaulting over the border fence. I'm sure we'll see this guy in next year's Olympics. Sometimes things just don't work out the way we plan. A man went to a marriage counselor for some marital advice, only to find out his wife was having an affair with the very counselor. Oh, darn it. And how about this? A British soldier in his career has survived dengue fever, malaria, COVID-19, and just last week was bitten by a king cobra, and he survived that too. This guy deserves his own Marvel comic book. And finally, a man in Taiwan tried to hide his new PlayStation 5 from his wife by telling her it was an air purifier. Good luck with that, Sparky. On the podcast today, we have Kyle Tedding, Dave Sandstrom, Joel Dreesing, and wrapping up the week, here's Bob Landis.
Thanks, Max. Pretty good week. NASDAQ up 2.1%, climbing 258 points to close at 12,464. S&P stock composite 500 up 1.7% this week. Really nice advance. Broader markets added 61 points to close at 36.99. The S&P is up, including dividends, 16.5% of the year. What a great year. Financially, Dow Jones Industrial Average are up 1% this week, tacking on 307 points. Dow's been marching to a different drummer this year, only up 8.2% for the year. We close the bell this afternoon in New York with the Dow finishing the week at 30,218. The quick look at the week in review. You know, Joel, I want to start with you this afternoon with the Labor Department report showed that U.S. hiring slowed sharply last month. Only 245,000 jobs created. Fifth month in a row that we've seen the job numbers slow down. You know, Joel, as you know, there's still more than 10 million people out of work that had been working. Last February, unemployment rate slipped just to 6.7. But the labor market's slowing down here, Joel.
That's right, Bob. So we're, you know, looking at two different surveys that the Labor Department does. One is of employers and the other is with households. That employer survey is showing us that we have as many jobs now as we had 5 years ago. So as you said, we slipped, you know, we lost 22 million jobs March and April when everything was shut down. We've got about 12 million of those back. So that's that 10 million you're talking about that are still, you know, those jobs aren't there anymore. And what we're finding is from the household surveys is that a lot of the people who have lost those jobs, that more of those jobs are permanent losses. They're not temporary layoffs. At first, there were a lot of temporary layoffs. Now we've got long-term unemployment rate. The percentage of people who are unemployed who have been unemployed for 27 weeks or more is about 37%, double the rate what it was in February. As I said, the number of people who are whose jobs are classified as permanent losses, that's been going up. And that's a concern, especially when we see that unemployment benefits that have been extended by the stimulus that Congress put forth earlier in the year, that those are about to expire at the end of this month.
Kyle, you and I talked at length about focusing on the jobs reports as probably one of the more reliable leading economic indicators coming out of this downturn. And sure enough, it has been showing now clearly that the economy is slowing, something you and I suspected was occurring late in June, early July, that the economy was slowing after kind of a V-shaped recovery in April and May into the first part of June. And now this is just another data set here confirming the slowdown.
And, you know, Bob, I think one of the things that we had talked about early on that, you know, Joel's now alluding to is this fact that many of these jobs that were lost are permanent losses. And that was something that we saw coming. It's certainly something that a lot of the PhD economists at the Federal Reserve saw coming. But I think more importantly, we're now getting confirmation about a lot of that stuff that we suspected was true. And recall that, you know, we had a lot of conversations in March and April about what the shape of the recovery would be. And a lot of thinking that this wasn't V-shaped, this maybe even wasn't, you know, that Nike swoosh shape or anything like that. But potentially this was more of an L-shaped recovery where we flattened out and then stayed at that lower level for a little while. And I think what we've seen in terms of forecasts for early 2021, what we've seen in terms of predictions is that the economy continues to struggle along for a little while here into early next year. Now, a lot of what happens after that depends on vaccine. A lot of that, what comes after that depends on how well we control the pandemic today. But I think the reality is, you know, these are things that we potentially saw coming. And if anything, this is confirmation that much of what we talked about is here.
And Kyle, if I may, that's not saying that, you know, we're at a point where it's hopeless. I mean, a lot of those jobs will not come back. We, you know, have to be realistic. But, you know, there have been people who have dropped out of the workforce, who just, they can't look for a job even because of the pandemic. And so when things get better, when, you know, we've got the pandemic, you know, under the virus under better conditions, we're going to see more people coming back. We're going to see employers start opening up their doors again.
You know, gentlemen, just a perfect example of the stock market's not the economy. The economy is still kind of a mess. Market all-time highs recently because they march to different terms. You know, the market's responding to earnings, supposed to fully recover sometime next year. And the market is basically telling us that 9-12 months from now, things are going to get pretty back to normal. Hey, Dave, as you know, the markets received a boost this week on the news of the possibility of a fiscal relief package from Congress, a whole lot smaller than one that we're talking about in September. But it looks like it could be coming here just in the nick of time.
Yeah, Bob, that's encouraging. You know, I think what we saw with the first package, we were able to dodge, I think, a pretty substantial bullet with things happening in the economy. The first $2.5 trillion stimulus package that came out. The original fears, of course, were we were going to see massive defaults in mortgages, car loans, credit card debt, and we've seemed to so far have been able to stem that. That result. However, as Joel pointed out, we're starting to look at some of these stimulus measures kind of coming to an end here. So your point about getting to a point where we can reissue another round here, I think is going to be critical to helping us get through this winter, because, you know, if we see numbers continue to go with the virus like they're headed right now, it could get to be a pretty difficult winter. So I think people are going to need that additional stimulus to get us to the backside of the vaccine.
Dave, President-elect Biden has also mentioned the potential for further stimulus down the road, that this isn't necessarily a single shot in the arm, but rather, you know, one of potentially other steps that may be needed to stem the tide of the slowing economic forces, at least until we can get to a point where the economy can start to reaccelerate on its own.
Kyle, as you know, we've seen a broadening out of the market since early November, where some of the laggards have started to come back, particularly in the value space. But I'm very intrigued by what's going on overseas. A lot of the international funds have really jumped here recently. Part of it is on the heels of a weaker dollar. I think part of it is on the heels of COVID being much more firmly under control, particularly in the Pacific Rim, than here in North America. But it's really nice, in my opinion, as a money manager, to see a broadening of the markets, to see more participation from anything other than the big FANG stocks.
And, you know, Bob, I think the challenge as we look at stocks outside the U.S. is that the indexes themselves have maybe not kept up with broad markets this year, although recently they've started to. But the reality is that there's a lot of areas of the world that are doing really well right now. And so, you know, if you're strictly measuring by something like the Morgan Stanley Capital Europe Asia Far East Index, which is kind of this broad measure that we look at to try to say, how is the world doing? Yeah, okay, you're doing well, and especially the past couple of weeks, you're doing really well, but you're not doing as well as the U.S. is doing. But if you look, you know, a little bit deeper at some regions of the world that maybe have a little bit better handle on the virus, you mentioned the Pacific Rim. You know, there's countries in Europe that are having some challenges like we're having right now. On the other side of that, there's countries in Asia Pacific that are doing far better. And so their economies have been able to be more open. Their businesses have been able to more fully participate in that. And I think as you look at your international investments, you know, you mentioned the tailwind of a weaker dollar. That's a big deal. But the other piece is that you can't strictly say, I want to buy the index. I think you need to be a little more active in what you're doing there. It's why, you know, when we look at the funds we invest in globally, it's so critical to have managers, it's so critical to have investment teams that can think critically about what, you know, the very disparities that we're talking about mean, not just on a country by country basis, but even more importantly on a company by company basis. And so, yeah, I think there's a lot of reasons, valuations, a tailwind to the dollar, why non-US makes a lot of sense right now. I think because it makes so much sense, it's even more important that we get it right. Even more important that we really advocate for those regions and those businesses that have those opportunities and shy away from those that don't, because there's going to be some even bigger disparities than what we've seen in the past as we look at our global investments.
Kyle, also what I've noticed is that you don't need to get aggressive when you go overseas, that even the equity income funds, some of the conservative balance funds are sporting really nice returns recently. Sure, the growth stock funds are doing a little bit better overseas, but you know what that tells me is a lot of it is the weaker dollar that's pushing it, a fair amount of money pouring into the emerging world right now. And you know, once that trend starts, it's kind of hard to stop it for a while. So I'm just really encouraged by that. Dave, at the research committee meeting on Monday, you brought up one of the $64,000 questions of the day, and that is, you know, the 10-year treasury yield has jumped from 0.6 to 0.9. Didn't take all that long. And to paraphrase your point, that, you know, is there a possibility of inflation creeping in? Is there a possibility of interest rates going up much? You know, when you look at central bank bond buying around the world, it makes it difficult, you know, unless they abruptly change their bond buying practices. It's hard to imagine rates going up much because of what the central banks are doing. If you look at core inflation, you know, 40% of it is housing costs. So unless you're buying a house, you kind of strip that out. But measurable inflation is hardly there. But why don't you talk a little bit about interest rates and where you see stuff going?
Yeah, Bob, you know, it's always a concern, right? I mean, you hear, we've heard it since going all the way back to the financial crisis, right? With quantitative easing and the central bank intervention, the people crying about how this is going to do is spur massive inflation and, you know, devaluation of the dollar. And we haven't seen that happen. We're still here about those types of concerns today. And yet we look at, to your point, the angle and the tact that the central banks around the world have taken, and that is a very firm commitment to maintaining interest rates at a very accommodative levels, and not just through holding, you know, their overnight rates at zero, but also the bond buying programs that they've embarked on don't appear to be losing much steam here. So I also think that to add to this, we've also seen, you know, the United States especially, but some of the other central banks making comments that we're not tying these interest rates directly to inflation anymore. You know, the Fed had for a while there said, okay, we're strictly going to say, here's our target for inflation. If we hit that, we're going to raise rates. They've backed off of that. And I think you're starting to see some of the other central banks follow. So to your point, I think that even if we do get a little bit of inflation, I think the central banks around the world are committed to some long run low interest rates.
I think they gave up. You know, they're trying to create 2% inflation in the United States for years and years and years and years, never could. So I'd pick a different goal, different target if you're not going to hit that one. You know, Kyle, we're heading towards the end of the year. It's important to remind investors to look at opportunities to reduce their tax liabilities. It's a good time to look at unrealized gain losses in your non-retirement accounts to see if there's an opportunity to save money on taxes there. You and I did a show over Thanksgiving talking about charitable giving. There's plenty of time for clients that are 70 and a half and older to give money right out of their IRAs to charity. It's easy to do. Strongly encourage people to take a look at that. But this is a year when a lot of people didn't do their required minimum withdrawal. So it's an opportunity to perhaps even pull money out of an IRA if you're temporarily in a low bracket. I think there's a fair amount of planning opportunities here.
Yeah, I agree with you, Bob. I'm always struck. This is the time of year when every financial website and financial magazine puts out their article about Roth conversions. They put out their article about, you know, the impact of capital gains on total return. They put out, you know, the 10 other articles that are all those year-end planning items. And I think, you know, the challenge for us is that if you wait until December to cross a lot of those things off your list, it's sometimes too late to fully accomplish your objectives. You really need to be planning throughout the year. And so I think now what we're doing and now what we should be doing with clients is looking at, you know, what's happened so far and what's left to be done. But as much as it's about what's the opportunity to navigate capital gains, maybe it's recognizing some losses in that taxable account to offset some of the capital gains we know are coming in such a strong year for equity funds. You know, yeah, that's a great idea. But the other part is that as the calendar turns over, we're already planning for here's what last year looked like and here's how next year is going to look different. And so as much as I care at year end about what tax situations are, and I care a lot, obviously, I think if anything, it's a reminder that those conversations need to start earlier than December. And so if you're just seeing, you know, the article in your favorite financial publication and haven't had that conversation yet, you know, yeah, we need to have it. But more importantly, next year, let's start right away with how can we plan out the year so that we put you in a position come December where all we've got to do is check facts and make sure that everything is the way we thought it was going to be. Because, you know, again, I think you get to mid to late December and it gets to be a little late to really make any difference. And again, I think the one saving grace for so many this year is that in the absence of a required distribution from your IRA, it's giving everyone a lot more flexibility in tax brackets than they otherwise had. And so, you know, every conversation I have with clients, and I'm sure every conversation, Bob, that you and Dave, that you are having, it's not a question of whether or not you need to take money out of your IRAs. It's a question of whether or not it makes sense given what your other tax liabilities are. And maybe it means that, you know, you can get a little bit more out this year at a lower tax rate, leave it in the bank, even though you don't need to spend it down just yet. And again, then next year, you don't have quite as much you have to worry about potentially pushing you into a higher tax bracket.
So if I bring this up next month in January, I'm off the hook for bringing it up now.
Oh, for sure. Of course.
Okay. Dave, you have any comments?
No, I think Kyle covered it pretty well. The point that he brings up, I think, is really important, is to look at the year as a more all-encompassing tax plan instead of getting yourself in a corner waiting until the last minute.
Max, I think it's our responsibility to bow our heads for just a moment. Lon Adams passed away the other day, 95 years old. He, of course, is well known for being the modern inventor of the Slim Jim beef jerky. Pretty hard to get out of a childhood in the United States without eating a couple of Slim Jims every now and then. So, Lon, thanks for the fun. Can't think of the last time I had one, but I sure liked them when I was a kid.
Well, you should get one tonight for dinner.
I probably won't. This is the end of yet another Money Talk. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.